name's Brittany. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Lindsay. That was fucking phenomenal. Really was. And I could just relate to so much of what you were saying, really, truly, because, you know, you're an alcoholic and so am I. So there you go. Let's see. My sobriety date is November 30th, 2012. So I actually looked it up today, and it's like 2,029 days sober, and I'm like, whoa. Because, like, then I wanted to, like, find out, like, you know, how long is 2,029 seconds, because that's how much, like, I feel like I couldn't be sober that long. I looked at it, it was, like, half an hour. I'm like, ah, I could have been sober half an hour, but, like, I didn't choose to be on most days. So, yeah, 2,029 days, that's incredible. Certainly couldn't do it on my own. I needed all of you guys. I need this program, so... I do have a sponsor, and she's here tonight, and she actually just celebrated 10 years of sobriety, which is incredible. I thought that I was getting dizzy and about to fall down. I'm like, am I, like, losing my... Okay. Woo. Like, the room is spinning. It's, like, bringing me back to old days, you know? Like, is that going to stay? All right. Okay, this works. I love you, too. No, it's really cool. My sponsor's got 10 years of sobriety, and she's the same age now that I was when I got sober. And that stuff just blows my mind, you know, thinking about people who get sober that young. I envy it sometimes, but then also, like, I can now recognize that I needed, like, all of those years of just balls-to-the-wall drinking. I needed all of those consequences, all of that heartache, all of the loss, because without that, I wouldn't make it in here, you know? Like, I had to know for a fact, like, every fiber of my being that I had a problem and I couldn't fix it. So, and I still got sober, like, relatively youngish, you know? The best years are still ahead, I think, maybe, hopefully. But, yeah, so obviously I have a sponsor. I'm open for sponsorship. I just moved back to the area not that long ago, so I haven't picked up any sponsees yet. But if you're shopping around, I'm available. So hit me up after the meeting. And I finally have a home group as well. I got asked to speak on the spot a few weeks ago, and I knew it was going to happen because I didn't have a home group. And I was like, this is going to happen. I'm going to have to admit that I'm, like, not that sober. But I do have a home group now. It's a Friday night women's meeting. I think they're called, like, Swamp Chicks or something. I don't know what it stands for, but it's over at our club on Gandy, and it's, like, really great, and I love it. So now I have that commitment, and that's important for me. Like, commitments in AA have saved my ass more times than I can recall, probably. I don't know if I wasn't here right now. Actually, today's hair washing day for me, typically, so I would be home, like, letting my hair dry out and watching Jeopardy, so, you know, doing really self-centered things. And now I get to be here and hopefully helping somebody understand their alcoholism or feel like they're not alone. I'd say that's a little bit more significant than the other. But yeah, so what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was born in Dallas, Texas, and born to an alcoholic family, but not so much in the active sense. My mother got sober when I was about 3 years old, I believe. So I don't really remember her drinking. I have one very vague memory. She had a Porsche, if that, like, kind of dates my age. So I remember, like, being in the Porsche one morning, and, like, we're driving somewhere, and she just, like, pulls into the parking lot of the Circle K and just, like, blah, like, right out the car door. And that's, like, all I remember of my mom's drinking. So I'd say I'm pretty lucky to be the, you know, child of an alcoholic, and that's, like, the memory I have. But, yeah, so she got sober, and I went to a lot of AA meetings with her, so I've been coming around here a long time. And all I remember is, like, a lot of people laughing and smiling and a ton of smoke, because you could smoke in meetings back then, so, like, lots of smoke. But yeah, people always just seemed, like, really happy in AA. I didn't quite understand it. It's like, you know, they're kind of laughing about their tragedies, and it's like, what the hell is that about, you know? But I get it now, you know, because we all can understand it. But yeah, I'm one of those people, I believe I was born an alcoholic. I do believe there's a genetic factor to this. I know I've had people say, like, there are no alcoholics in my family, but it's not really something you talk about, like, you know, at family gatherings, like, oh, yeah, so-and-so's an alcoholic, you know. It's probably there. We just maybe don't talk about it. But it was, like, undeniably obvious in my family, and I believe it because I was a very obsessive individual from a very young age, obsessed with everything that I was doing. I really felt like I didn't know who I was, and I felt like I should know who I was, and that was a struggle for me. And I'm like, well, like 6 years old, like having like a life crisis, which doesn't really make sense. I don't think normal six-year-olds do that. But so I was just desperate to figure out like what I was meant to do, who I was meant to be. And so anything that seemed interesting to me, I would just like throw myself into it 100%, because like maybe this is who I am or what I'm supposed to be. And so that was like dance or gymnastics or school or a class clown or whatever it was, until alcohol came along and I was like, oh, this is my purpose. But I also remember too, I mean, I had a good childhood. I mean, I was an only child, so that was pretty nice. But I just, like, I was relatively happy, very energetic. But I remember feeling, like, always looking forward to something. Like, I never had enough. Like, even in, like, really good times, like, it wasn't enough. I'd always be thinking, like, God, I just can't wait for summer to be here, then I'll be happy. Or God, I just can't wait for this vacation I'm going to take, then I'll be happy. Or until I get this boyfriend or this, you know, medal or whatever. It's like, and then I'll be happy. And, you know, if I got those things, I don't remember ever thinking, like, now I'm happy, you know? Like, it just was never enough, right? And I was thinking about that today. I mean, that's definitely what makes me an alcoholic. Like, it's just, it's never enough. Like, I can't just have one. And I was thinking, too, wasn't there, like, a slogan for, like, a snack or, like, a candy or something? Like, you can't just have one. I don't know. I Googled it today, and it just came up, like, all this stuff about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, that's what that is. huh? Lay's potato chips. There it is. It is something. All right. Can't have just one of those either. You know, it's pretty much everything. So this is a good place for me to be. But yeah, so when I first got here, I thought my first drink was when I was like 12. And then, like, it's funny how the longer I'm here, like, the better I am with honesty. And I realized that I had drinks a lot earlier than that. Like, I would just sneak in drinks anytime that I could. Like, family things, I was finishing people's drinks then when I was, like, 5, 6, 7 years old. Like, already, like, life of the party. They didn't have cigarette butts in them at that time, though, which was nice. That changed later on. But, yeah, so I had those drinks, and I did it because I knew I wasn't supposed to. Like, anyone told me something you're not supposed to do, and I'm like, I'm doing that. I didn't like being told what to do. I didn't like following any kind of rules. I just figured the world was supposed to bend to the way that I saw things fit because I'm really smart and I'm really right. I realize now that's very wrong. But I spent a lot of my time just thinking if the world would just comply to the way things should be, then it would all be fine. I catch myself still doing that, but it's gotten a lot better. But anyway, like, this obsessive thinking, this obsessive, like, identification, loss, whatever it was, all I remember is that when I actually had my first drunk, like, that went away. Like, I didn't feel like I had to know anything. I just felt, like, okay. For maybe the first time in my life, I just felt like, this is it, you know? Like, I want to feel like this forever. And, I mean, feeling, like, you know, drunk felt good, too, but it was just, like, having everything stop. You know, and having that obsessing just stop. And I held on to that. I didn't get sick the first time I drank, so, like, I really had, like, no consequences from that. So I'm like, anytime I can do this, I'm going to do it. And I did. It didn't really take off that much in high school, but I wanted to go away for college because I was like, yeah, like, I'm getting out of here so I can drink. And so I did that. And actually, it was kind of bad. I got a partial scholarship, at least, to go to a school that where my family was in West Texas, and I didn't take it because I knew I wouldn't be able to get drunk the way I wanted to out there because I had family there. So I was like, no, I want to go down to UT Austin because that's what's, you know, going to be my thing, and I want to go with this guy that I've been seeing for, I don't know, 4 months, who is, like, clearly a drug addict. You could just see it, just really clearly, and he was my dream, my God, he was the one I was waiting for, you know. And so we went off, you know, rode into the sunset, and it was a super controlling relationship full of drinking all the time, getting high all the time, and really that was all that we did. I wasn't really allowed to have interest outside of that. Even actually trying to get weed and stuff, like, he would get jealous of me trying to talk to, like, a dealer, and I'm like, dude, do you want to get high or not? Like, I don't really understand the point here. But still, it was just my world got very small, we'll just say that. Between the drinking, drugs, and this relationship, my world got very small. And the relationships that I had had up to that point, which I had really good friends from high school, from, like, middle school up through when I graduated, freshman year of college, so much with my parents and my family. Like, just little bit by little bit, they all started going away. I thought they were just too busy and running their own lives, but really, they didn't really want to have much to do with me, because when I was around, I wasn't part of a friendship. I was part of a what-can-you-do-for-me-ship. And a lot of it was like, oh, I remember that this girl's dating this guy, and he's over 21, so he can get us booze and blah, blah, blah. Like, that was the way I saw friends, right? Friends help each other out, you know, but I wasn't helping anybody. It's just take, take, take. And it was bad. And actually, one of my friends reached out to my mom at one point. I found out later to say, like, I think something's wrong with Brittany. And my reaction to that was, fuck that friend, you know? Like, that's not a friend. It's just, it was, I was just letting things go like that. My drinking progressed pretty quickly. Because it quieted the voice, like I said. So basically, I realized pretty early that as a functional alcoholic, that I needed alcohol to, like, do the things that, like, other people did. Like, it's, like, to be social, to go to class, to go to work, to drive my car, to do all these things. Like, over time, I needed alcohol to do those things. And, in fact, I truly believed in my insanity that I did those things better while I was drinking. It was a really insidious slope, you know? It's like, I don't remember ever, like, you know, hating myself or having anything like that, but just as time went on, this alcoholism of mine just convinced me, like, if I wasn't this person, I wasn't good enough. And so to be this person, I had to drink, right? I had to drink. I had to get rid of all this anxiety and all this, like, less than bullshit because, you know, I had to show up, right? And for me, drinking meant I could show up, I thought. I didn't really realize that actually drinking was having where I didn't show up, like, for people or for jobs or for class. Yeah, actually, I was just talking in the parking lot about this. I actually did graduate from college a year later than I should have. I went to school for engineering, for aerospace engineering, for rocket science, actually. I didn't get a degree in rocket science because that's hard. It requires a lot of school and then a lot of homework, and it just didn't really fit my drinking schedule, so. And then also, it just conveniently, the war in Iraq started that spring, and so I just used that as a platform to say, like, oh, I'm not finishing my degree because I'm not going to be an advocate for this. I'm not going to go work for Boeing or Lockheed or any of this stuff. Like, I don't stand for it. And for the longest time, I truly believe that's why I didn't finish my degree, is because I have standards. No, I couldn't. I couldn't finish it. I wasn't cut out for it. But I did actually graduate somehow, only because I really liked what I was studying, and I also made a lot of BS excuses to my professors when I didn't show up for tests because I slept through them and just manipulated my way through that. I honestly don't know how it happened, but it did, and I got through with that. And then I had to, like, have jobs, and I had to show up for them. You can't manipulate that stuff, you know? So pretty much I had this, like, rinse, wash, repeat thing of, like, you know, have an obsessive relationship, have a job, mess up the relationship, mess up the job, just all around, and trying to convince people that, you know, it wasn't my fault. All these circumstances, you know, these were just happening to me. I just had bad luck no matter what I would do. Nothing seemed to work out. That wasn't the case, but yeah, I became a morning till night drinker. I was a liquor drinker, the way Lindsay described it. I don't know if I wore pants. I don't really remember, but it looked a lot like that, you know, toward the end. It would just be me drinking by myself. I'd try to pretend to be social, but, I mean, I always had alcohol with me. Like, I remember actually being at one of my many, many jobs, and I had to smell like it because I drank all the time, right? And it was hot in Texas, too, so you can smell that coming through the pores, right? I remember being at a job and having somebody near me, like, talking about this one employee they used to have who would go out to the parking lot and drink in their car, and I was like, who does that? I do that, you know? And I was so terrified that they knew, right? And it's like, of course they probably knew. I probably reeked of it, you know? And still, like, I don't take that hint, so it's like, instead, I take a different job, because they can't know what's going on. So I just kept doing that. My mind started to go towards certain things. Also, things got really, really dark. I lost my aunt to this disease. She was a nurse, and she was self-medicating. And on a really bad Christmas night, she ended up blowing her brains out. She was my favorite aunt. She was my mom's youngest sister. She was always like an older sister to me. And upon finding that out, that just pretty much set me over the edge. Instead of realizing what this disease does, you know, for me, it was a selfish internalization, and I just couldn't deal with it, you know. And I drank over that, and started going to these really dark places. I've always been a bit of a self-mutilator just to kind of pop myself into reality. That's what I used it for. But that took to a whole other level. I was dating a guy who... We did a lot of drugs together, and he became really unreliable. Imagine that. and he had disappeared one night, and I didn't know where he'd gone, and it was around the same time. And I actually, just decided it was time to end it all. And I ran a bath, and I slit my wrists in a bathtub, and he happened to come home. Like, right after I had done this, and, you know, called the authorities, whatever, I woke up in a hospital with my arms being sewn up, and, my father being there, and he's just heartbroken, right? And I just can't even face the reality. My first reaction is like, Dad, you gotta look at this. You can, like, see all this blue stuff in here. Like, you're never gonna see this again. And, like, my poor father, like, just to have to see me being like that. And, of course, I'm obliterated, you know? It's probably the shittiest moment that I experienced. And it still wasn't enough for me to realize that I had a problem. I knew I was an alcoholic, by the way. I just didn't know what that meant. I knew that I drank a lot. You know, I thought it was functional, whatever. I didn't realize that being an alcoholic meant, like, that's going to be me until I die, you know? And especially, like, knowing now, like, women in my family live a really long time. So it's going to be, like, me for a really long time until I die really old. And it's not going to be fun for anyone around me or myself. But yes, that was the first kind of consequence that I had. Got sent to Green Oaks Hospital, which I still don't know where this place is in Dallas, by the way, because I've been there 3 or 4 times, and every time I've been blackout shit-faced drunk, right? So I still, it's like Narnia of Dallas. Like, I really have no idea where this place is, but I've been there. So I've been there a few times just from blackout drinking and fighting and someone thinking I'm going to hurt myself. And then I had an incident where it was the same kind of thing. I was threatening to hurt myself, and my boyfriend tried to take my utensil away from me. And as I, like, jumped back to get away from him, I just barely nicked his T-shirt and just, like, cat-scratched him like that, right? So there's, like, a little bit of blood on his shirt. Well, I guess, I don't know if he called the cops or if someone else had called the cops. I'm really not sure how that shook out. Someone called the cops. And when they showed up, they're like, you know, putting me in the car, and I'm like, okay, so we're going to Green Oaks, right? And they're like, oh, no, like, you're going to jail. Like, this is a problem. I'm like, no, okay, you don't understand. When I get arrested, you take me to the crazy hospital, I sober up, I lie, and I get out, right? And they're like, you know, I'm trying to tell the cops how to handle me. That's, you know, the kind of drunk I am. I'm just crazy, right? So, I actually got charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and went to jail, and had my dad bail me out, because once again, it wasn't my fault, and I did not belong there. I absolutely belong there, man. I remember in my arraignment, like, people standing up one by one. It's like, you know, they had possession or prostitution or something. They get to me, and it's like aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and I'm like, I don't belong here. You know, it's like, I was probably, like, the most dangerous person in my group. So I just still didn't see, like, I didn't see that alcohol was always involved in all these things that were happening to me and everything that was, like, dragging me down. I just didn't see. In fact, the moment I got out of jail and my dad put his house up for my bond, I called a friend to pick me up so I could go over to her place and drink. Because that's all I could think about. I was just sitting in jail detoxing, like, the worst pain of my life. And I'm just like, God, I just need a drink. I just, like, can't even see what's going on. Because of that, I decided to come to AA, because I know all about AA, and I figure if I go in early before the courts tell me I have to go, and, like, I make my own, like, Excel spreadsheet, which I did to, like, have people sign it and stuff, I'm like, man, I'm so smart, I'm gonna get off so scot-free, and, so I was going to AA for, like, I don't know, somewhere around maybe 6 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that. And I was smoking weed the whole time because it says nothing about weed in the steps. So clearly that's okay. And obviously I knew a lot about AA, right? So yeah, I was doing steps and stuff, like with a sponsor, like just, you know, doing all this stuff and reading the big book high. And it's like, man, this is great stuff, you know, except for the God stuff. I'm really not on board with that, but it'll be okay, you know. It obviously didn't work, as I learned that you have to be sober for the steps to actually do something. And I quickly fell out. I was supposed to be, like, reporting to a bond office twice a week. I stopped doing that. I was supposed to do a lot of things, and I stopped doing it. Because I just didn't care, to be honest. And I had no, I don't know, bit of sanity really left. Anyhow, this just continued for me. I will say, though, when I had come into AA and after I left, and I didn't realize this until much later, I've never cut myself since then. Which I just believe is a little bit of God that must have gotten into my life, something just to keep me alive a little bit longer. And honestly, too, the way that I was drinking and driving and going out and stuff like that, that kind of ceased a bit, too. The drinking didn't, but just something changed enough to keep me alive long enough to get here when I need to be here, whatever you guys did. So flash forward about a year and a half from there, and I mean, things hadn't gotten any better. I was living with a burnout guy that I supposedly knew in high school. I don't remember him, but he remembered me. He was living with me, and I was taking all sorts of things. I didn't know what they were. He gave me some brown powder and told me it wasn't heroin, and I was like, oh, okay. And he was doing that, so clearly in my right mind. But I just, I don't know what it was, except for I just got to say it's God, that I didn't believe in at that time. But I just woke up one day, and instead of grabbing my bottle like I always did, it just like a wash came over me of it's time to stop. And it was the strangest sensation, because I know I don't think like that. I think about, when's my next drink? I mean, my entire life revolved around it. I live in Texas. We have these blue laws where you can't buy alcohol after 9 p.m. and you can't buy alcohol at all on Sundays. And oh yeah, from noon to 9 too. You can't buy it before noon either. So it's like I had it like meticulously scheduled of like how much alcohol I was going to have and when I need to be at the liquor store. And everything was revolved around that. And then all of a sudden, I had a thought of it's time to stop drinking. Like, whoa. And I actually reached out to somebody who was my Facebook friend in an AA group, that AA group that I had joined and stayed in shamelessly after I was still drinking. And I just told her what I was going to do. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get sober, and I know all about AA, so I'm going to need a sponsor, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you should probably go to detox. I'm like, nah, I know what I'm doing. I didn't know what I was doing, and actually I got very, very, very sick trying to get sober. So when I got here, I was like literally on death's doorstep. It was pretty gross. I don't remember what it was like, but I get to be told by the women I got sober with what I looked like bloated and disgusting. And one of them the other day, or it was just like a couple months ago, I was in Dallas, and they're like, weren't you living in your car at one point? I'm like, I don't fucking remember, probably. That sounds about right. So, but they get to tell me what it was like. And obviously, I don't know, I guess I've come a long way. But yeah, so I didn't want to come into the rooms until I was sober. I did wean myself off of alcohol when I got here. I really had no resources left. I mean, at this point, I tried to make life work with my drinking. I tried a lot of ways to do it, and I just couldn't. So I threw myself into AA. I did the steps pretty quickly. The God thing actually like came fairly fast for me, just because I mean, like, I had that kind of burning bush moment. That was a big thing. And what was weird, too, is as I was weaning myself off of drinking, I was getting, like, really, really sick. Really, really sick. In fact, I found out I had an autoimmune disorder doing that. I didn't actually get diagnosed because I didn't have insurance because I wasn't employable when I got sober. But I did find out later that's what it was. And so I just knew. I knew if I drank that illness would go away. The pain would stop. Like, everything that was happening to me. I looked like 7 months pregnant. Like, it was, like, crazy. All of it would stop if I drank more, and I didn't. So something had happened where I turned something over, and it got me to the doors of AA, and I haven't had a drink since. So, yeah, it was pretty quick for me to believe in a power greater than myself, for that to be God. I'm comfortable saying that now. I used to say it was, like, Have you ever seen Donnie Darko? I'm sure you have, right? Remember like a little wormhole thing that like comes out of people and like guides you like different ways? Like for me in the beginning, I was okay with saying that was like my higher power. Because like, God forbid I say God, you know? Like, it's like spirit of the universe and all this like really long shit. And then finally it was like, okay, I'm just going to give it up and just call it God, whatever that means. And that actually works in here. I'm allowed to do that. It doesn't matter what I mean by God. As long as I mean something that's not me or you or something that can really let me down. I don't really like when I say like, you can pick a doorknob or a chair because, I don't know, chairs can break and doorknobs fall off, so not a fan of that. But anyway, the whole point is that, you know, I listen to my sponsor for the most part. I want to do the steps, to do them as honestly as possible. I got through them, and I was able to start sponsoring others, and that's really where it was at. Actually, when I was 9 months sober, I had heard about this cool thing to go teach in Taiwan, teach English in Taiwan. So again, 9 months sober, and I'm like, I'm doing it, man. I'm so doing it. I'm going to bring AA to Taiwan, right? Like, where they speak Chinese, because I am that sober. And I told my sponsor, because I was really excited, and she was like, no, you're not. And I was like, fuck you. And then, like, this is how I continue to believe in God, though. It's like, I seriously went against her, and I started applying for it. I started, like, getting all the paperwork that I needed, and then I had to get a passport, right? And the government shut the F down. I could not get a passport because the government shut down. So if that's not God saying, like, slow your roll, like, I don't know what is. But so I just decided to be patient, right? And I actually got a transfer up to Tampa. I've never had a drink in Florida, to my knowledge. I was a blackout drinker, so maybe I did. I don't know. But not since I've been here in the past 5 years. And Tampa AA has taught me so much. You guys taught me about service. You taught me about getting close to women, about leaning on the people in the groups, about being a part of. I still thought I could do this stuff on my own, just like me and God, because we're like that, you know, like that I'd be good. And sobriety was, for me, pretty easy the first 2 years. And then it wasn't. And when it got hard, it couldn't just be me and God anymore. I needed you people. And I hated that I needed you people. I really hated it. But I did, you know. I needed friends. I needed groups. And you guys have put me back together so many times, it's kind of ridiculous at this point. I will say, you know, things are getting kind of close to the end, that a lot's happened in my sobriety, a lot of really beautiful things. I did actually get to go to Taiwan. I just got back. I was there for a year and a half. I was teaching English over there with a friend who I met here in Tampa AA. We got to go together. So again, God was just like, chill, bitch, I got you, you know, like, and so I got to do that, and it was amazing. Sorry. My God is a little ghetto, just kind of like me. So that was great, you know, and I've had other amazing things. I've had, you know, really excellent jobs. I have actually a lot of respect in that way. I've had a relationship that's not, it doesn't exist now, we broke up, but like I had a real relationship where I actually loved somebody like honestly and thoroughly, and I found out that I can do that, and that's an amazing thing, you know, like I didn't know I could do it. I have a relationship with my parents, again, like it's brought full circle. I had a key to my mom's house, like that's insane, you know, like she didn't let me have that for a really long time. My parents trust me, and they love me, and I have friends, like, real friends, because, like, I had to learn when I got here, and it was a tough lesson, that I was incapable of a true partnership with anyone. It's in the 12 and 12, and it's true for me. I was absolutely incapable of that. And I still struggle with it, but I know, and I work toward it. You know, I know what a relationship's supposed to look like. I did end up getting diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder. I'm in the hospital a lot. I'm like a pretty sick person. And that's okay. Actually, I remember someone asked me if that like hurts my relationship with God. And it's like, no. Like, are you mad at God? Because like, whatever. It's like, sometimes I am. But it doesn't make me not believe in God. I think my higher power is okay with me being mad at him. He'd just rather I do that than not talk to him. And that's just kind of how that goes. So, yeah, I don't know. It's been a lot of ups and downs, but to be sober today is pretty much a miracle, and I owe that to you guys and to my higher power. So thanks for asking me to speak, and yeah.